You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas is 1-0. They beat Cincinnati 31-24 on Saturday at Razorback Stadium. Next up for the Razorbacks is the SEC opener this week against South Carolina. It will be an 11 a.m. kickoff on ESPN. The Razorbacks moved up from number 19 in the AP poll to number 16 with the win over Cincinnati. Kind of surprisingly, the Bearcats dropped out of the AP poll. You would think that given the fact they were on the road playing a ranked team, a team from a bigger, better conference, that they would have stayed ranked. But alas, Cincinnati is not ranked this week. Matt Jones with Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph of WholeHogSports.com. Did it surprise you that Cincinnati fell from the poll, given how it felt like it was an evenly played game for the most part in Fayetteville over the weekend? You know, Arkansas, I guess, you know, you could say Arkansas took advantage of the mistakes that Cincinnati made, and Cincinnati made a number of mistakes that ultimately contributed to the outcome of that game. But I just thought that, you know, if Arkansas moves up three spots and they're pretty evenly matched with Cincinnati, it doesn't quite make sense that Arkansas would move up so much and Cincinnati would fall out.
Yeah, I kind of understand why they fell out. Me and Tom Murphy were actually talking about that right before we walked into football practice on Monday, and he was kind of considering keeping Cincinnati in his top 25. I'm not sure what he ended up doing ultimately, but I kind of proposed the opposite side of the coin, you know, where since it seemed like Cincinnati shot itself in the foot so much and didn't execute to the point where I wasn't 100% sold, you know, that they were a top 25 team. I think they're still you can be a really good team, or not a really good team, but a really solid team and not be in the top 25. I think they're a team that will ultimately get back into that top 25. But if I was an AP poll voter, I'm not sure that I would have had Cincinnati in the top 25.
Yeah, I think it would have been maybe easier to keep them in the top 25 if Arkansas had a more convincing victory and they looked the part of the better team for the majority of the game. But I thought really it was kind of an ugly game where Cincinnati kind of lost the game more than Arkansas really won it. And I just think if they would have maybe lost to a team like where you're saying Arkansas played really well and that they were just the better team on that day, then you could keep Cincinnati in the top 25. But neither team really was overly impressive, I thought.
Yeah, I think it's a team that, like I said, is going to get back into that top 25 because they are pretty solid. They're pretty solid. They've got good weapons. Once Ben Bryant, I think, settles into that quarterback role, they'll be really good. They've got a really good linebacker. And I think their skill guys and their running backs were pretty impressive to me. But, yeah, just too many mistakes at this point in the season for me to think they're top 25 worthy. But they'll get back there.
Tom Murphy, who works with us, by the way, he did leave Cincinnati in his AP poll this week, left him at number 25. He's our state's AP voter. You know, I think if you're Cincinnati, you feel like you left about 13 to 17 points on the field. They missed the field goals. They had the turnover early in the game where Dwight McLaughlin intercepted it, returned it. Arkansas, of course, converted that into a touchdown. The big play of the game, I thought, or the big sequence in the game, is when Cincinnati recovers a fumble at the Arkansas 3, and then they just backpedal for several plays. There's a couple of four pre-snap penalties. There's two delay of game penalties. I think there was a false start in there, maybe an illegal formation, too many players in the backfield. That was just the big sequence in the game. If Cincinnati ties it there, I don't know if they win the game, but the fact that they kicked a field goal, I thought that any chance there was for a swing in momentum, it didn't happen. And Arkansas was able to keep the momentum. I did hear somebody ask today, was the crowd better than the Texas game? I guess Trey Knox on Sam Pittman's coach's show last night made a comment that he thought the crowd was a little bit louder than the Texas game last year. I don't know that I really agree with that, at least from start to finish.
I don't at all.
Well, but what I was going to say is I definitely don't from start to finish, but that sequence right there, though, when they were down inside the five, that was clearly the loudest, you know, portion of the game. And it felt like the crowd made a big impact on the game at that point.
Yeah, that's true. Like really good atmosphere, especially for an opener, you know, top 25 game. People were really excited. I think the heat in the middle of the afternoon had a little bit to do with, you know, some of the Some of the fans in the stands, especially, I guess, on the east side of the stadium, got out of there, or at least changed their seats, and it looked like it was a little bit more open up top in the second half. But yeah, when Arkansas fumbled inside their five, I thought that might be when the game turned potentially, because, I mean, talking about a Cincinnati team all week that kind of prides itself on the same types of things that Arkansas does, and I would figure a coach like Luke Fickell would really emphasize, you know, toughness, especially in that red area, and it is in a big point in time in the game too. Like, you got a chance to tie the game, and then those delay of game penalties, I think, were the most stunning thing about that sequence to me. You can't take your timeouts with you, and I think you've got to be a little bit more cognizant and have, you know, better I guess game management skills there, and just be aware of, you know, the situation and the clock and all that. I think Ethan Westerman, who went to the Cincinnati postgame press conference for us, he said that, or he wrote that Cincinnati tried to go to a silent cadence in that situation, and they just, it sounded like they had their wires crossed and they weren't all on the same page. And that was pretty evident, because it was kind of hard for me to believe that they got one delay game penalty. And then when it happened again, it was just pretty stunning. So the lack of execution there was pretty bad. But I think Arkansas's crowd, without a doubt, made a difference in that sequence. And, you know, I thought maybe some of the guys that were there for Cincinnati that maybe played in the college football playoff semifinal last year would, you know, be able to, you know, rally the team and kind of get them ready for the type of environment that they were going to play in. But it just didn't seem like that was the case. And I think I wrote an HI in my game story that Cincinnati shot itself in the foot so many times that it couldn't even kick itself for losing the game. I just think that was just kind of it for me. I never felt like Arkansas was going to lose the game. Like, even when they fumbled inside the five, I felt like Cincinnati might tie the game, but I didn't have any doubts that Arkansas would win it. And that was especially true after they had to settle for a field goal there.
Yeah, it's interesting to me just how large of a factor crowd noise can really be. And you heard Luke Fickell talk about the hostile environment they were coming into before the game. And I think he mentioned that there's not really much you can do in practice, at least, to prepare for it. Because if you have the speakers amped up and you're having such a loud practice, I think he said, are you really getting a good practice, or are guys just screaming at each other and not being able to hear things? And so, I mean, it's kind of interesting that they're not able to kind of fully prep for that until you're actually facing it.
And I think too, like, we're stationed on the west side about, I mean, we're not exactly on the top of the stadium, but we're about mid-level, right? And I think that we don't get like a realistic feel for how loud it is, just because it's a different animal noise-wise when you're down on the field, when it's all that noise is coming down on you. So I think from our vantage point, we knew it was loud, but maybe we should extend a little bit of grace to Cincinnati, just because it can be a completely different ball game when, you know, you're down on field level.
Well, not only that, but they don't play in stadiums of this size very often, certainly not their home stadium and not the stadiums that they go to in the American. You know, there are some stadiums that are probably comparable to Arkansas, you know, or at least within about 10,000. I'm thinking like the Liberty Bowl in Memphis, but they don't fill that up, you know, for Cincinnati or for Memphis, for any game really, other than maybe if Arkansas or Ole Miss is playing in the Liberty Bowl. You know, so they're not playing in those types of environments very often. They played in it last year at the Cotton Bowl, and I mentioned this last week. They played at Notre Dame a year ago, but when they played at Notre Dame, it was a huge Cincinnati crowd that went over to South Bend to watch that game, because it's one of those once in a lifetime type games that, you know, you don't get to see your team play at Notre Dame Stadium very often. And so if you go back and you look at that game, there's a ton of red. I mean, a ton of red in South Bend for that game last year. I just don't think that the players on this team, at least, or the majority of them, and I'm talking about the players who have been at Cincinnati for 4 years. I know they've had some transfers in from LSU and other places, but those players who have been at Cincinnati for 4 years probably haven't played in an atmosphere quite like they played at, you know, with Arkansas, given they had the COVID year a couple of years ago. And then, of course, you know, the teams that they played last season. I always look in the first game how do you do in turnovers? How do you do in penalties? How do you do on special teams? And I guess you could probably say that about every game. You know, that's going to give you a pretty good indication of who wins. But it seems like those are really magnified early in the season. You saw the LSU-Florida State game the other day where special teams can be such a killer. And it seems like it happens a lot early in the season. South Carolina, who's coming in here later this week, they blocked two punts and converted a fake field goal against Georgia State the other night. And that led to 21 points, and they ended up beating Georgia State 35-14, beat them by 21 points. And so special teams, it just feels like it's a much bigger area in the first week because for whatever reason, Sam Pittman said that, you know, a lot of times you just don't have tape on what the other team is going to do special teams wise. And so it's hard to prepare for them, but Arkansas won the special teams battle the other day. Cincinnati got the upper hand in punts, but Arkansas had 5 of 6 kickoffs for touchbacks. They made their only field goal attempt. Cincinnati missed a couple of field goals. You look at penalties, yardage wise, they were about the same. I think Cincinnati may have had 2 more penalty yards, but they had 3 more penalties. And then you look at the time when those penalties came, for instance, that possession in the red zone, just really untimely penalties, I think, for Cincinnati, where it really hurt possessions that could have potentially changed the game. And then in the turnover battle, Arkansas won it 2-1. And again, it's not the fact that they forced turnovers, it's what they did with them and where Cincinnati was when they forced them. They were driving in Arkansas territory early in the first quarter when McLaughlin intercepted it and returned it 51 yards. That led to a touchdown run. It gave Arkansas a 7-0 lead. And then in the fourth quarter, Jordan Dominick had a strip sack, recovered it. Arkansas scored a touchdown there, and that ultimately was the touchdown that decided the game. It put Arkansas up 31-17, and they won 31-24. Those three areas are where you watch, and they're areas that I know Sam Pittman is real big and harps on, and Arkansas won all three.
Yeah, the turnover that Arkansas had that set Cincinnati up inside the 5, that was kind of a head scratcher for me. I think KJ took the shotgun snap, and I believe, if I looked at the replay right, saw everything right, it appeared to me like he was trying to, you know, do the mesh a little bit before he had the ball secured in his hands. And that was, you know, something I think maybe we saw a couple times last year, maybe with Traylon Smith, or maybe it happened to Rocket Sanders one time too. I'm pretty sure that'll get cleaned up. He's probably still kicking himself a little bit over that. Just put the defense in a pretty bad situation. I think that the Arkansas's decision making in the game, there was some good and bad. Like I would say the bad is kind of in hindsight, just because, you know, when AJ Green brought that kickoff out of the end zone, I think I was sitting right in between you two guys, and I think I leaned over to Andrew and said, "Bring it out." And then AJ brought it out. He got to like the 16, and you know, 16 is not the greatest place in the world to start a drive. But Arkansas got backed up to the 8 because of someone else's mistake. So some things to clean up there a little bit, just in terms of decision-making, when to bring the ball out, when not to, being a little bit cleaner on special teams. But Matt, me and you talked about several times during the game, Arkansas had some fourth down decisions to make near midfield. And it seemed like there was no hesitation in Sam Pittman's mind whatsoever that he was going to punt the ball away and just, you know, use his special teams as a weapon, trust his defense to get a stop and kind of play the field position game. So I thought a couple times, you know, when Arkansas was near midfield, kind of had a decision to make, I would have probably been fine with Arkansas going for one of them at least, if not both. Just the power run game is pretty effective when you got a guy KJ size and a running back like Rocket, who's as physical as he is. You really trust your offensive line, and you know the progress Trey Knox has made as an inline blocker. So I think the decision making was good and bad at times, but the decisions that Sam made to just, like he said at the HI Sports Club a few weeks ago, he's not going to press and he's going to let other teams make mistakes. And I think it turned out to be a really good decision, because Cincinnati made plenty of mistakes, man. That I think Arkansas just continuing to play their game really paid off in the end.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about that during the course of the game. There were a number of times where Arkansas was facing a 4th-and-2, 4th-and-1, you know, 4th-and-short somewhere middle of the field, and he wasn't going to go for it. He was going to punt it, play the field position game, make Cincinnati make the mistakes. And I'm with you. I think that Auburn game last year really taught him that you play the percentages a lot more than you kind of go with your gut in some of these instances. And it felt like that was an overriding theme on Saturday.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting too, right? Because Sam is one of those, I think you classify Sam as a good old boy, right? And like sometimes good old boys make decisions based on their gut and not the numbers. But I think Sam really, like I wrote in HII and everybody heard at the sports club, he's not going to put his team in a bad position to potentially cost them a game again. Did that last year. And I think that's a great sign as a young head coach in his third year. He's already learning lessons that stick with him. And I've got no doubt that was in the back of his mind throughout Saturday's game.
Arkansas's offense played pretty well. I thought 447 yards to Cincinnati's 436. And I thought the defense played pretty well for a while. Now the second half, Cincinnati made some adjustments that hurt Arkansas, and the Razorbacks really are fortunate that Cincinnati didn't score more, because there were several instances where receivers got behind the Arkansas secondary and Ben Bryant's passes were just off. I wasn't sure that KJ Jefferson was playing the greatest game at one point on Saturday. It looked like his zone option reads were a little off. They weren't quite as crisp as they usually are. Yeah, but he ends up accounting for all four touchdowns, made some really nice runs when it mattered. I'm thinking of, particularly that last drive of the game where he converted a couple of third downs with his legs. I thought Rocket Sanders played really well. Trey Knox kind of showed you what he's capable of as a tight end. You got some big plays out of Jaden Hazelwood, out of Matt Landers. It's kind of like the players that we thought were going to step up offensively, they did for the most part.
Yeah, I think one of my pregame predictions that I told Scotty was that Trey Knox would have 50-plus yards and a touchdown. So he made me look good on that one, and I think he's going to have a really bright future as a tight end, and he really seems to enjoy that position. And then a big, maybe a not a big surprise, but more of a pleasant surprise was the defensive line, specifically the transfer defensive lineman stepping in and rising to the occasion. Landon Jackson looked really good, and he stood out right away with his size. Terry Hampton had a few plays in the backfield and showed off a little bit of that built-in leverage that Sam Pittman likes to talk about. And then Jordan Dominick might have been the play of the game with that strip sack and fumble recovery.
Yeah, Jordan Dominick was great, and I think he played less than 20 snaps, but I looked at some Pro Football Focus numbers on Monday, and his pass rush grade was 91.8, which for your debut, I understand it's a small sample size. He wasn't out on the field just a ton, but that grade tells me that whenever he was out there trying to get after the quarterback, he was being pretty productive, pretty disruptive, and the athleticism and the wherewithal to, like, not only hit the, like, make the move that he did, the inside spin move was gorgeous. He whipped the left tackle, got into the backfield, jarred the ball loose, and then picked himself up off the ground really quick, and great awareness to find where the football was and jump on it. He was great. I think his reps are probably going to go up this week, just because I think it's same for Landon Jackson too. Those guys probably stood out more than Arkansas's two starters with Jashad Stewart and Zach Williams. I think those Jashad and Zach, I think they're probably going to start again, but I wouldn't be surprised if the two transfers get a little bit more run this week. They were great. And Andrew, you're 100% right. Like, Landon Jackson's size is just, it's freaky. At 6'7", he's long, got good feet, and he moved around pretty well for a guy that's just coming off an ACL injury. Like, I think a lot of people kind of look over that a little bit, but he didn't get back on the field until, maybe the last week of spring, earlier this year. So he's making good progress. And I think one of the more underrated performances of the weekend was a guy that rushed for over 100 yards with Rocket. Like, I think he had a little bit of frustration early because his first three touches went for 6 yards. I think his first four went for 8, and he just kind of seemed like he was bottled up. I think his first carry went for 7 yards, but half of it came back because of a penalty. He got upended, when KJ targeted him one time in the passing game. Just a lot of things weren't exactly going his way early, But he had two really big runs. I think he gave them 24 yards when they were backed up against their own end zone once. And then his 37-yard run right before the half set up KJ's jump pass touchdown to Trey Knox. If there can be like an unsung play from the game that maybe is not getting a ton of attention, but was a really big deal, it was that one from Rocket, because I think it was a kind of a microcosm of his big playability, and what could be, coming in store, the rest of the regular season.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is sponsored by Kendall King. Kendall King is a retail execution company based in Bentonville. For more than 30 years, they have helped leading brands deliver creative POP solutions to their retail partners, design, displays, signage, KendallKing.com. That's KendallKing.com.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
A change in plans for this week's Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Hunter Yurecek was supposed to speak to our club this week, but due to a funeral, he's not going to be able to make it. So we're going to switch gears and go with Mike Neighbors, who was scheduled to speak to our club later this week. Mike Neighbors will be at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on Wednesday, and that's at the Hilton Garden Inn in Fayetteville. If you want to find out ticket information for that, visit our sister website, nwadealpiggy.com. That's nwadealpiggy.com. Mike Neighbors will speak at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on Wednesday, and Hunter Yurecek has rescheduled for us. He'll come and speak to our club on October the 12th. We hope to see you there in Fayetteville, just off of Weddington Drive. Arkansas beat Cincinnati over the weekend. Still recapping that game. You look at the Razorbacks defensively. How do you judge what they did, Scotty? I mean, they only give up 24 points to a Cincinnati team that I think probably could have scored a lot more. But on the other hand, you look at it, 436 yards. That's not the best number. And then, like we said earlier, there were a lot of plays where it felt like Cincinnati just didn't capitalize.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it in the past, even in like games that Arkansas has won previously, like they're going to give up some yards. But at the same time, Barry Odom, I think, is really, really good at testing the patience of 18 to 22 year olds. And normally he's pretty good at getting the upper hand there, right? And I think Ben Bryant, it's tough. Like before, I think right before he got to Cincinnati, his last game that he played was for Eastern Michigan. And he just probably wasn't prepared for the environment. It seemed like kind of like the rest of the roster. And his touch wasn't there, especially down the field through the air. I was looking at stat broadcast. Cincinnati was 4 of 14 on passes, 15 plus yards downfield. So part of that is just his touch wasn't there. Some of that too was just Cincinnati not executing and coming down with some pretty big passes. So I've got a little bit of concern about the secondary. I'm not sure that we're going to see just a whole lot of Ladarius Bishop moving forward. He had a overall defense grade, according to Pro Football Focus, of 29.3, and his coverage grade was 30.3. The last time I looked, Dwight McLaughlin, I think, led Arkansas. His overall defense grade was somewhere around 74, and his coverage grade was at 77. So there's a pretty big gap in some of Arkansas's talent at cornerback, and I think like it just makes sense, right? Like you've got to play your best talent on the perimeter against some of these really talented skill guys. So I think it's kind of like, they're going to put their best defensive backs out on the field. And I know early on on Monday, we got to see a little bit of practice, and a guy like Kari Johnson, who was he was battling for some maybe back like a backup role at corner, maybe third team. He's going to be a guy that's probably going to slide over to the safety, might even play some nickel too. I was pretty impressed with him at times in the spring. I thought he played with really good physicality. But they're like South Carolina with Spencer Rattler, they're probably going to spread the field out and really test Arkansas's corners and their DBs, you know, potentially without Catalan and Slusher. Like that's, they're going to have their hands full. But again, I think it comes back to these young quarterbacks just, are they going to take what's given to them? Are they going to get a little bit greedy sometimes and potentially make a mistake? We'll see. Bumper Pool leading Arkansas in tackles was not surprising whatsoever. He's always around the ball. And I think we'll probably see Drew Sanders, I think, played fine. He had a sack and he lit up Ben Bryant a few times, which probably, I mean, those body blows, they add up and, you know, could have played a factor in some of his inefficiency downfield as a passer. But I think Drew missed a few tackles. I think that's probably just game one jitters getting out of the way, new role, new, you know, new defense, new responsibilities. I think he'll be better in week two. But my questions right now are with the defensive backs, especially with some injuries that we don't know just a whole lot about at this point, set in stone. So we'll see. But yeah, the Arkansas DBs are going to have their work cut out for them this week more so than last week, I think, just because I think South Carolina's quarterback is better.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that the defensive line played surprisingly well. And I think the secondary, not to say that they were bad, but I think they were shakier than anticipated after all the offseason talk about how Sam Pittman said they're deeper at the cornerback spot than they've ever been at throughout his tenure. And then with the return of Catalan, which obviously he went out injured and so did Slusher. So you can kind of point to those two injuries as maybe a factor in their shaky play. But I think even before they went out injured, they got beat deep a couple of times, or maybe not got beat deep because the pass missed, but the receivers were able to get in behind. And let's say if Ben Bryant was able to connect on one of those throws, I mean, it could have been a whole different ball game. And so I think the secondary probably is the biggest weakness in that defense by far, because I think the D-line looked good to me. And then I think Bumper Pool and Drew Sanders are pretty much as good as it gets as a linebacker group. And I don't think they're ever going to be a reason that defense is giving up yards or points.
Yeah. And we can say that we're a little bit concerned about the secondary, but in terms of cornerback, I don't think there's any question in my mind anymore. Not that there was a ton to begin with, but Hudson Clark and Dwight McLaughlin are clearly Arkansas's top two corners. And I think those two guys, you know, this week and in the coming weeks, especially like when SEC play really gets rolling, like with A&M and Alabama back to back, they're going to have to be guys that can stay on the field, you know, a majority of the game, if not the entire game. I know Hudson came out for a few snaps, I think early, maybe in the first quarter, he got dinged up a little bit. Those guys have just got to be, they've got to be durable, and I think they're going to be really counted on to play a majority of those cornerback reps in a similar way to, you know, what Michael Scherer is relying on Bumper Pool and Drew Sanders for. They're the best options, and they've got to play. I don't think there's two ways about it.
Bumper Pool was the SEC Defensive Player of the Week. He had 13 tackles against Cincinnati, and Jordan Dominick was the SEC's defensive lineman of the week. Of course, had the strip sack that was such a big play in that game. And to Scotty's point a little bit earlier, Bumper Pool right now, you talk about him leading the team in tackling, not being a surprise. After Saturday, up to 362 career tackles. He is just 46 tackles shy of Tony Bua's school record. I saw a video the other day where Tony Bua was kind of patting Bumper on the back pregame down on the field. So it's coming. You know, if Bumper can stay healthy all year, he's going to break that record and then maybe put it out of reach. I mean, for anybody else to do it, because, you know, the thing that Bumper's got working for him is that he's gotten to play at Arkansas for 5 years. Other players coming along down the pike, you know, they're unless we have another COVID situation, and God help us if we do, but, you know, if unless we have another situation like that, you know, where players get an extra year of eligibility, nobody's going to touch that record, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. And I was you know, was writing the quick brief on Bumper, you know, earning some SEC honors. I was looking through his CFB stats profile, and that was his fifth season opener. And he's averaging 10 tackles per season opener, and I think he's got 38 in the last three. And for a guy that's as physical as he is and always around the ball, he's had really, really good injury luck, I think. I know, obviously, he's probably dealing with some things and has dealt with some things that we're not being made aware of, but he's by and large been on the field, been able to stay healthy. And I think it's kind of a testament to him, you know, playing with his head up a lot more than maybe some of the guys he's played with in the past. So that allows him to stay on the field, and he's always around the ball, just super productive.
One potential addition for Arkansas this weekend, and like Scotty said earlier, we don't know about Jalen Catalan. We don't know about Miles Slusher and what their availability is for this week or moving forward in the future. But Arkansas could potentially get Dominic Johnson back this week against South Carolina. Sam Pittman said on Monday that Johnson's going to have a bigger workload in practice early this week, just to see what he's capable of doing. And if he feels good about it, and the coaches and the training staff and the medical staff, they feel good about it, then they're going to let Dominic Johnson play this week against South Carolina. And, you know, that's a name that when you're in the kind of in the moment watching the game, I don't know that I even had this thought, you know, what would they be like with Dominic Johnson? But you kind of step back and you see what they did from a rushing perspective against a pretty good Cincinnati defensive front, or at least what we think is going to be a pretty good front seven for Cincinnati. And you add Dominic Johnson to that, assuming that he's able to cut and do the things that we're used to being able to see him do. Yeah, that to Rocket Sanders and AJ Green, and we saw a couple of flashes out of Rashad DeBinion. Of course, KJ Jefferson is going to give you something in the running game every week. Malik Hornsby gave him something the other day, at least with one run. You know, so you add Johnson to that, and that's just another element to this rushing game that makes it a lot better.
I want to see Dominic Johnson back on the field as much as the next person. I'm just not entirely sure that it's the best idea to bring him back in week two. You know, I think we're guilty sometimes of wanting a guy to come back so much that we kind of assume that when he does get back, he'll be as good as he was when he was at his best, if that makes sense. And I'm not sure that that's entirely fair, because that's going to be his first time probably getting live tackled since, you know, he got injured. That's a lot of time off to not be taking any hits. I think Arkansas, honestly, right now, after what AJ Green showed, I think maybe on his first carry, Sam said he's, you know, finally saw some of that 10-3 speed getting through a hole. That was encouraging. And then Rashad DeBinion kind of showed you a little bit on a national stage what we saw in the spring a few times. He's just pretty shifty. He can make guys miss by not really doing a whole lot, but he can really stop on a dime and cut with the best of them. I think Arkansas's got enough at tailback, and you throw in KJ into that mix too, just in the run game. I think Arkansas's got plenty enough to get through the South Carolina game potentially. I think maybe next week against Missouri State is when you maybe work him back in, get his feet wet. But yeah, I think I watched Dominic Johnson a little bit go through some position drills, and I think yesterday on Monday he looked a little bit smoother than he did cutting up the field. Just changed the direction. I think all that looked a lot better than it did last time I saw him. And, you know, the first time I saw him, he still looked pretty good. He's making progress. I would be a little bit leery of bringing him back, you know, against an SEC caliber defense. Maybe work it back in against, you know, the likes of Missouri State. That would, you know, boost his confidence a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree. To me, it almost seems like adding Dominique Johnson back to that running back room is more of a luxury at this point than a necessity, just because of all the talented options that they have in that backfield right now. But if he does come back and is the Dominique Johnson of the past that we saw, it'll be interesting to see how they divvy up those carries. And because of that, all of that talent in the backfield, I just don't see that there's a way to feed all of them. You know, like, I don't think KJ is going to have 18 rushing attempts every game, so that'll free up a few, but I think there's maybe just a little too many mouths to feed if he comes back and is healthy.
You know, we mentioned earlier that we thought that KJ wasn't super clean on some of his, you know, his you know, zone reads and that kind of thing. And I know Sam mentioned that on Monday they probably gave Rocket maybe a few too many carries. You know, if KJ's cleaner this week in that area. Maybe that takes, you know, a couple carries, three or four carries away from Rocket. And maybe he's fresher for a little bit longer. And then, you know, you're not super concerned about, you know, who's going to take the RB2 carries, if that makes any sense. So I just think KJ's got some things to clean up. And, you know, his zone reads, I think, are an area where we'll probably see some improvement this week. And I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, South Carolina's got a couple pretty good ends that like to stand up. So I think it's going to be really, really important for him to be cleaning those reads and, you know, potentially make those guys miss.
I just think that I've never seen a college football season where a running back room did not get impacted by an injury. And I think you've got to get Johnson back into the game when he's ready. You know, they're not going to put him out there if he's not ready this week, obviously. But whenever he's ready, I think you've got to get him back into the game and get him acclimated to game action, because there's going to be an injury at some point, whether it's to him or another running back, where, you know, whatever you see as a certain running back's role, you know, somebody else is going to have to step up and fill that. And so I think that, you know, whenever the time is right, they've got to get him back into game action. Doesn't mean he gets 10 carries. He might only get four, but it just kind of gets him back into that groove. And so I think that's real important, assuming that he can go this week. Okay, we'll be back with another podcast later this week. The Razorbacks in South Carolina are on Saturday at 11 a.m. We'll preview it with Tom Murphy later this week of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. For Andrew Joseph and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. Hope you'll join us at WholeHogSports.com for all of our latest Razorback football news. And we'll see you next time on the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.